Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, we've got lots of news. Cases of respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, are on the rise, but there's a vaccine for that. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett talks with immunologist Dr. Juanita Mora, the national spokesperson for the American Lung Association. And not only is it flu season, but it's election season as well. Election Day is less than a month away. Radio Catskill's election coverage is in full swing, and coming up, we're going to meet the Board of Elections for Ulster County. But to get us started tonight, we have an update on the election news that we brought to you yesterday, when State Senator Peter Oberacker announced that he's throwing his hat into the ring, looking to be the next congressman representing much of the Radio Catskill listening area, New York's 19th District. After announcing his bid on social media and also in person in his home in Otsego County yesterday morning, he came to Sullivan County yesterday afternoon to do the same thing here. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio reports.
State Senator Peter Oberacker, who represents New York's 51st District, officially entered the race for New York's 19th Congressional District, announcing his campaign at Holiday Mountain in Bridgeville. Surrounded by local Republican leaders, including newly elected Sullivan County GOP Chair Rob Doherty, Congressman Mark Lawler of the 17th District, and Assemblymember Chris Tague of the 102nd, Oberacker called the 19th one of the most important districts in the state. The seat is currently held by Democrat Josh Riley, who narrowly defeated Republican Mark Morellano in 2024.
So this November, we must reject the socialist agenda of Hochul and Riley and Mamdani and ensure our values are represented and heard in Washington. And I'll tell you this, the greatest title I'll ever hold isn't senator, and it ain't congressman. It's Pop-Pop. And that's why I'm running. Because I want my grandkids and yours to have the same opportunities that I had, to grow up in safe communities, to live in the country that protects our freedoms, and to stay here in upstate New York, to build their lives, instead of feeling forced like they have to leave, to have the opportunity to live and achieve the true American dream. That's the fight, that's the mission, and that's why I'm asking for your support, for your faith, and for your vote. Because soil is our common ground, and together, rooted in that same soil, we can build a stronger New York and a stronger America.
Earlier in the day, Congressman Josh Riley's campaign manager issued a statement responding to Oberacker's announcement. That campaign criticized Oberacker as an Albany insider with close ties to corporate interests and said they'll be ready to compare his record with Riley's if he wins the Republican nomination. When asked about the statement, Oberacker replied,
Josh, I haven't seen him around, so I'm not really too worried about that. They can say whatever they want. In reality, I think my record stands for itself. Work the district, people know me, and I think people will vote for me in that capacity. So I'm not worried about what anybody says.
In Bridgeville, I'm Patricio Rovallo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. In the coming weeks between now and Election Day on November 4th, not only are we going to be bringing you conversations with candidates in key races right here on Radio Catskill, but we will also be checking in with the folks who run elections at the local level all around our listening area. And to get us started today, Patricio Rubio spoke with the Ulster County Board of Elections.
Ashley Torres and John Quigley, commissioners for the Board of Elections for Ulster County. Welcome both to the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us.
So let's just start off here. What we're asking all the Board of Elections people that we speak to, what does exactly the Board of Elections handle in Ulster County on a day-to-day basis during the election season?
Yeah, sure. So during the election season, we are a staff that is very busy. We have full-time staff members here. We are a staff of 14, serving 144,000 registered voters here for Ulster County. The day-to-day, and as we get closer to the election, we are issuing absentee ballots and vote-by-mail ballots. We are canvassing those twice a week, getting them ready for election night reporting. We are also testing voting systems. So the machines that will be out for early voting and on election day, we have test ballots. So we're right now making sure that the machines, once they are out in just a couple of weeks, that they're going to work properly when they're out at the poll sites. We are training election inspectors right now that work the poll sites. We have lots of classes. We have a little over 650 election inspectors, so part-time workers, and they come to a 2.5-hour, 3-hour training class that Don and I teach them. So we've been doing that. And yeah, we're just getting ready, doing things like this, getting the word out about the election, talking to voters that have questions, and just trying to let people know that they have an election this year. It's a local election year, so it doesn't get as much attention. Thank you for having us, because this definitely is amplifying that message.
Yeah, yeah. Usually Harper local events, elections don't get a lot of turnout there. Well, I'm going to ask you this, John. What does a successful election day look like from your perspective?
A successful election day looks like all of our inspectors showing up promptly at 5:15 in the morning to make sure that our poll sites get opened and operating by 6 a.m. As one of the states that has the longest election day in all of America, from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., we have to make sure we have ample staffing and readiness to basically respond to anything that can happen on election day, whether it be those small power outages, a grumpy voter at a poll site, or just making sure that they have the water to get through a hot summer day like we did this past summer. We service those poll sites to make sure from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. they are giving voters the best voting experience possible. And in Ulster County, they get to leave with a very lovely I voted sticker that was designed by a student. So we hope that when they go to vote, they have a good experience based on the work we've put in prior to training our inspectors and getting them there to make sure everything operates in a smooth manner. Otherwise, we're here collecting results at 9 o'clock, waiting for those poll sites to close down and return the material back to us. And by about 10:30, 11, we'll hopefully be walking out the door knowing what 99% of the rest of the community will know, which is what those votes will look like.
Just take a look. We've talked a little bit off air here about some changes that made to polling locations this year. Ashley, do you want to talk about one of the ones that we talked about, Marble? It looks like their location is changing this year.
Yes. So for early voting starting October 25th, Ulster County has 6 early voting sites that we put around the county. And for early voting, any voter in Ulster County can go to any of those 6 poll sites. So we have had the same 6 sites open for the last couple of years. I would just encourage people to go to voteulster.com to get information on our early voting locations. One of those locations did change recently from the Marlborough Community Center. That site will not be open for early voting. Instead, voters will be going to the Highland American Legion. So that was a change. They booked it for some other use, and we found out about it, and we had to move the site.
Yeah. John, we'll go back to you here. We mentioned that this is a local, hyper-local election. While there's not a big turnout, there's a lot of races happening throughout the county. Legislature of county seats or town board seats are up for grabs. With so many local races on the ballot this year, what is the biggest challenges you think can face the board coming into this election?
So with a local elections and lower turnouts sometimes means just a slower work process for not only our inspectors, but our employees. And sometimes when we go slower, we have a tendency of making more mistakes. And so with that, we just make sure we pay extra attention to the details so that when we're checking our voters in, we're selecting the correct voter. We're not in a rush. We're providing the best service that we can. The challenges more so in a local year is that we are working with more candidates because there are numerous candidates on the local ballots that are just trying to get educated on the process. And Ashley and I become a really good extension for them to reach out and understand what it actually takes for our local elected officials to run for office. Just being a candidate, it's something that we honestly, I don't think we give them the the respect for running for office to understand that process. They dive in without even knowing. It's like there's a blindfold that gets pulled off as soon as they say yes to voting, to running for office. And then next thing you know, they're like, I didn't sign up for this. You have to just walk them through and say, look, you signed up for the right reasons. You wanted to run for office. You wanted to give your community a choice and be able to explain your perspective on things. And that's probably one of the coolest things about our job, is just being able to share that journey with these candidates and being able to provide the voters with a good voting experience to step up and select who they want to support.
Yeah, definitely. Ashley, you mentioned some the early voting dates. You want to go over some of those early voting dates that are happening, the times?
Of course.
But what we need to know for this election?
Yeah. So early voting, again, it's going to start on Saturday, October 25th. That day is also what we call in the election biz Golden Day. And so that means it is a very special day for us. It is the last day for anyone to register to vote to participate in this year's election. So our early voting sites also serve as a place for voters to register and cast a ballot if they have not been registered here prior to that date. So it's a very important date for us on the calendar. It's our registration cutoff dates. Folks can go to early voting sites and do that and vote on the spot, or they could submit their registration form that day and then vote in the resulting the rest of the 9 days, and of course also on election day. So that's a big day for us, October 25th. We'll be open that day from 9 to 5. Generally speaking, our early voting days are all 9 to 5, with the exception of Tuesday the 28th and Thursday the 30th. On those 2 days, on Tuesday and Thursday, we are open from 12 noon to 8 p.m., so a little bit later in the day. So the election law requires that we have 2 later nights that go until 8 o'clock. So we've historically in Ulster County had those on Tuesday and Thursday. The other dates are 9 to 5. Our 6 early voting sites around Ulster County, I'll start off with the Olive in the town of Olive, the American Legion right off of 28 in Chokan. In Kingston, our site is at the Midtown Neighborhood Center on Broadway. In Ellenville, we have the Public Library open. In New Paltz, we have the New Paltz Community Center. In Highland, that's the new site, Highland American Legion. And then in Saugerties at the Saugerties Senior Center, that's in the Cantine Field Complex. So again, all of those 6 sites, any voter, regardless of where they live in Ulster County, can go to any of those 6 sites to cast their ballot. The way that works is that when you sign in, you have your ballot made for you on demand. So as you're signing in and affixing your signature on the poll pad, it then communicates to the printer and prints the ballot that is for your town where you live, so that you're voting for all of your very localized contests this year. So your town offices in the city of Kingston, it's as localized as your ward. So your alderman for your specific ward that you live in. And of course, the different county legislative offices that overlap in all of those towns, we want to make sure we give the voter the contest for where they live. So that's how we do it during early voting. We make them as they sign in, and then they get their ballot for where they live. Even if I live in Kingston, I could vote in New Paltz, not as close to Kingston as where I live in Hurley, and I'm going to get my ballot for my town and the contest reflected correctly.
Yeah, that makes it very convenient for folks, especially with their busy schedules, to go out there and vote.
Absolutely. Very easy. And people have been using it more and more. It's become a very popular program.
Yeah, but that was going to be my follow-up question. Do you see people using it, utilizing the early voting more and more?
We do. In Ulster County, we can brag about this. We are one of the highest in the state early voting participating counties. So we all have internally all the different counties. We have a little competition who can be the number one for turnout. And we are either always consistently either number one or number two behind Columbia County. So those are our biggest rivals. Another Catskills County is Columbia, and we're always trading back and forth who's going to be number one. So hopefully it's us this year. So any of your listeners listening, go out and vote. No matter how you vote, that's part of that competition. We want to be the best.
And the early voting, the early voting starts on October 25th. John, I just want to go back to you real quick. You mentioned at the end of the night, you're collecting the votes, tallying the seat. How actually the votes are collected? Because now I'm assuming everything is digital. No one's actually physically coming to you to give you the votes, they are sent digitally to you?
So we can't have them sent digitally. That would require putting the results on a network ahead of time. And everything we do in our voting process is to ensure the integrity of the process. So it's actually that we wait from 9 o'clock for a USB stick that has the memory of the election results on it to be driven back from that poll site to our office. And the whole process is secure because it is essentially a lock and key method that we have to audit as the process goes, that it gets back to us. We plug it into a system that is completely offline so that we can upload the results in a safe and secure manner. And then we download those results from that independent system and bring it into a network system. So that takes a bit of a process. It's not right away. And I think a lot of people think, oh, at 9 o'clock, we're going to see the results right away. There is definitely time that goes by from 9 o'clock until we get to the final results. And honestly, in Ulster County, it's typically we get to about 90%, if not higher, reporting by about 10, if not 10:30.
Now, the early voting, is that automatically calculated coming 9 o'clock? Is that already those results will be shown?
So early voting and the absentee or early vote by mail ballots are usually the quickest results that get to go up by 9 o'clock because we get to then at 9 get access to those results and upload those directly. So when you see election results right away, especially all across New York State at 9 o'clock, you're usually seeing people who are reporting their early voting and vote by mail ballots.
Yeah, absolutely. Ashley, just one more question here before we go here. What is the process if there is a close rate or a recount is triggered?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked me this question because it's something that we have often have to misspell and or dispel misinformation about this. People think that if the election is not close, that we don't count the ballots that come after Election Day that get mailed a bit later. We absolutely do. Those all get factored in. So if there is a close election on election night, there will be some amount of ballots that are mailed in that are postmarked by election day that are valid and able to be counted. So we do have a longer time frame to factor those in. Every day after the election, we're opening and adding more votes to the totals as more valid ballots arrive through the mail. We also have another bucket of ballots that are cast on election day at the poll sites called affidavit ballots. Sometimes they're called provisional ballots. Those are essentially ballots that are cast by voters that have something on their record that needs fixing. So maybe they're inactive because their mail is not being sent to the right place. They show up at a poll site, they're going to get to vote that day, but they're going to do it on a provisional affidavit ballot. So we look at those, we verify them, and then we count those. This year, it's going to be on November 10th when we count those ballots. So those votes get added in. Let's say all of that's done. We count all of the post-election ballots, absentees, mail-in, and those affidavit ballots, and it's still close, and there's still maybe a tie or a really close margin. We have in New York State automatic hand counts that happen when contests fall into specific thresholds. So there's percentage thresholds, and then there's also straight number of vote thresholds. So if a contest is within 20 votes, we're counting that all of the paper, everything that was cast either on a machine or through the mail, we're looking at that. We're making sure that all of the systems we use to tabulate and count the ballots, that it did it correctly. So that is what we'll do. If we have any close elections, we will look at everything. It's the nice thing about working in a state that has paper ballots is that we have that to go back and look at and able to verify it and count it. We've had recounts in Ulster County longer than anybody else in the state because we had a local law that also required this before the state passed theirs. So we are very good at doing hand recounts in Ulster County. We can get all of our county ballots recounted in anywhere from 5 to 7 days, work days, we'll get them all counted and verify who ultimately won and lost. And that's how we'll certify our elections. It's a lengthy process, but it's an open process. We are transparent. We invite people to come and watch us do hand counts. We invite them to come and test the machines right now. All of the things that we do are open to the public. Anybody can come and see how it works, how the sausage gets made, as they say.
Well, that's great that folks can do that, come up and do that.
Ashley and John, before we go, is there anything else that I missed do you want folks to know about?
Yeah, I would just want to emphasize, piggybacking on what Ashley said, the unique thing about ulcers, like, or New York, I should say, is we can never deny somebody the right to vote. We always have to have an avenue in which somebody can go to a poll site and cast a ballot. So if anybody ever feels like they're denied that opportunity, they should reach out to the local county board of election on election day to voice that concern that they can go and find out how to have a ballot cast. And then from there, that's what our affidavit method is for. We get to work after the election to verify and resolve any issues that might come up for a voter in their voting experience. But because it's New York State and the way we have this, you're never denied that opportunity. Make sure your voice is heard, because it's one that we guarantee for everybody.
We're talking to Ashley Torres and John Quigley, Board of Election Commissioners, for the upcoming election in Ulster County. And early voting starts on October 25th. Again, thank you so much, Ashley and John. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patricio. It is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. And we're getting deeper into the fall. Cases of respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, are expected to rise in children and their families. Vaccines have been shown to significantly lower the risk of RSV hospitalizations. And vaccines are the best way to help protect little ones, their parents, and even their grandparents. The American Lung Association is leading a national campaign to get all expectant birth givers and children under the age of 5 vaccinated. Radio Catskills' Genevieve Hartnett spoke with leading U.S. immunologist Dr. Juanita Mora, national spokesperson for the American Lung Association.
We are here to talk about RSV prevention of it escalating in children under 5. So can you first explain the root cause of respiratory syncytial virus and why babies are in particular are at the highest risk?
Sure. So RSV is basically a virus so contagious that happens in the fall and winter. Peak months are October all the way through March. And it basically causes 2.1 million outpatient visits for kids less than 5 years of age, 80,000 hospitalizations a year as well for kids less than 5 years of age. And the reason for it is because, one, kids are going to be higher risk, especially less than 5 years of age, for this virus, because it's a respiratory virus that hits their lungs. And kids less than 5 years old have very immature lungs. So this flooding of blood right into their lungs makes them more likely to have complications of RSV that can include pneumonia or bronchitis and trouble breathing and wheezing. And it's actually, RSV is the number one cause of hospitalizations in kids less than 1 year of age.
What are some of the signs that parents can be aware of? Most children get it, but there's some ways to prevent it from escalating even further. So can you talk about what the common symptoms are?
Sure. So RSV initially begins like a common cold. So babies might have a little bit of a runny nose. They might actually have fevers, and that's how it basically starts. But when they can get into trouble is when all this phlegm that this virus produces goes into their little lungs. And basically, two scenarios I always teach parents to watch out for with viruses such as RSV. One is when the baby start having trouble breathing. Remember, they can't talk to us, but if they have actual trouble breathing, they'll start using their little chest muscles because they can't get a good deep breath. They'll start having wheezing, a deeper cough. These are signs and symptoms to take them to the emergency department. The other one is signs and symptoms of dehydration. So when babies are sick, they're not able to eat. So you watch the number of wet diapers they have. If they're sleeping more, if they're more fatigued, another sign and symptom to take them to the emergency department, because they might need IV fluids to help support them throughout the virus as well.
What are some other steps parents can take to take precaution?
Sure. So initially, obviously, universal precautions to help these babies. So one, making sure that basically we wash hands frequently, especially as we're entering viral season. Two, that we, if your baby is sick or your child is sick, do not send them to daycare. Do not send them to school. Let's keep the germs at home. Don't have the grandparents come over, because people are going to be high risk as well, too, if they're greater than 65 years of age or more, and especially if they have risk factors for RSV infection. And also getting protection. And how do we get protection for RSV for these babies? So two ways. One is, if mommy is pregnant between weeks 32 and 36 weeks of pregnancy, she can get an RSV shot that basically mommy gives that protection, this protection to the baby in utero that lasts up to 6 months after they're born, which is great. The other way is if babies, as soon as they're born up to 8 months of age, get what's called a monoclonal antibody. So this is giving them a layer. It's just a shot that gives them that extra layer of protection against RSV already built in. So if their little bodies sees the virus, then it's going to have the capacity to fight it off. It's also available for kids who are higher risk from complications from RSV, 8 months to 19 months of age, which include kids with basically congenital heart disease, congenital lung disease, those who were born premature, cystic fibrosis, or any type of condition that makes them immunocompromised.
My next question was going to be about the shot that you can give mothers. And if you've gotten that shot as a mother, does your child still need one? And it sounds like the answer to that question is yes.
Correct.
Yeah. So I was also curious, have we seen a decrease in people taking precautions about this? Have we seen cases of RSV on the rise?
One of the things is we know we're about to hit RSV season because regardless of climate, even though we're having warm summers, everyone, we're still going to see RSV basically occur. And what we know now after having 1 year data of having this protection for babies available is that we can decrease rates of hospitalizations in these babies by 45 to 55% if they receive this protection. And I know parents don't want to see their baby sick or hospitalized. So anything we can do to help them is going to be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, have there been any like data per state or anything that it's higher in certain states than others? I mean, we're in New York, we're kind of in rural New York area. So, and there's some issues with, you know, the medical system potentially just with cuts happening. So I guess even in areas where it might be harder to get a vaccine, how can parents take precaution?
Well, definitely. One of the things, it's well covered under insurance. So they can talk to their pediatrician about getting treatment, which is really great. Or mommies who are pregnant can talk to their OBGYN. What happens is exactly, so you guys are in New York, just like in Chicago, we have seasons. We know that where there are seasons in the colder front, then viral spread is going to be maybe a little bit more. But we still see it in places like Hawaii and California. So it's still a flex. So it doesn't discriminate anywhere. So I think it's just very important that we continue to push towards babies and mommies and the whole family getting protected, even, you know, through everything and trying to make sure as we advocate for our patients to continue to have coverage for vaccines like these, where it's going to be life-changing and it's going to protect all these babies and grandparents as well, because it's the RSV vaccine is available for 65 years and over as well to protect the grandparents, which in many communities, the grandparents are the ones that take care of these babies. So this is why it's so important to talk about this topic.
It takes a village. It's really, really important. I was also curious, right now, there is this growing movement against vaccines saying that they cause all these cancers and everything. But if you could really just really highlight the importance of to anybody, any listeners maybe who might feel that way, why is it still so important to be getting these vaccines?
The American Lung Association is always going to be based on science. And this vaccine available for mommies who are pregnant and those people who are greater than 65 years of age and this shot for babies have been developed through science and shown its efficacy. We've already shown as well too that they decrease hospitalization rates in these babies 45 to 55%. And when you have doubts, let science speak is what I would tell the parents, and talk to the most trusted person you have, which is probably your pediatrician or your OBGYN. So that way we make sure that we protect our families as much as possible, especially in this coming respiratory season. And people can go to lung.org, L-U-N-G.org, where they can read up more on any of these vaccines or the shot for the babies as well and why it's so important. And there's articles linked that tell us about the science as well. I have seen the wonderful, wonderful implications of getting these babies vaccinated and how it protects not only these babies from getting hospitalized, but the rest of the family members in the home, including the grandparents. I'm a Latina, and so I know grandparents in the communities especially take care of a lot of these kids. So for me, I am passionate about protecting the whole family. And this is one of the topics where I know this one hits hard, especially in underserved communities, which is why I love to go out and talk about protection so we can get our communities protected.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Genevieve. Well, I'm Jason Dolan. This has been the Local Edition. I want to thank you so much for being here with me. We've got more news on the way from the Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville.